Okay, so what we've been focusing on up until now has primarily been halachic focused. So what I mean by that is there are some, there were some general points that we discussed in the classes that we had on the transmission of the oral Torah that are pertinent to all areas of Torah. And our last class on debate, on machloket, is relatively, at least part of it was pertinent to all areas of Torah. But a big part of our understanding of the transmission of Torah and how it gets passed down and expanded upon in every generation was very halachic focused, right? So there are areas in Torah which are not just halachically focused. Not just about understanding what you can do, what you cannot do, what you have to do, what you don't have to do. There are other areas of Torah that that are also subject to some similar principles of the transmission of Torah. So, who can give me an example? What areas of Torah have we been passing down from generation to generation and discussing, and perhaps even expanding upon, that are not halachic in nature? Yeah. So minhag is halachic in the sense that it does tell you what you can and cannot do, not from a because Kadosh Baruch Hu told this to Moshe perspective, but from a this is one of the factors that you think about when you're determining what you can and cannot do, is what is the predominant practice in your community or your family, et cetera, et cetera. So it is focused on halacha. It's just an element of consideration, which may not have been passed down from Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. So midrash. So what do you mean when you say midrash? Okay. So stories. This would basically constitute. Maybe interpretation of the text, or yeah, broadly speaking, interpretation of text in Torah. Midrash. Okay, what else? What? So Gemara is a book, meaning, or it's several books, and a lot of things are in there. Now, the Gemara primarily focuses on the transmission of halacha, but not it is not limited to the transmission of halacha. What else is in the Gemara aside from halachic discussions? That's again a commentary on the Gemara, but what is the Gemara itself focusing on, perhaps beyond the scope of a halacha? Midot. Okay, so yeah, so there's some discussion perhaps around around midot, proper behavior outside the boundaries of halacha. But there's one big area that we're touching upon, but we haven't said straight out. We're touching upon it, and perhaps midrashim are related to this area. Perhaps midot are related to this area, and that's the domain of machshava. Or maybe even more broadly speaking, ideas. Okay? So when we speak about halacha, we speak about what you have to do or can't do. We speak about the domain of actions. Right? But think about any class that you have that is not in halacha. Right? So what are you discussing? Perhaps appropriate midot, or perhaps biblical interpretation, or perhaps, meaning, is the discussion. Let's say, is the discussion around Olam Haba? Is this a halachic discussion? Right? Is the debate about, what is Olam Haba? What will the Yemot HaMashiach look like? Is that a, okay. Is developing Yirat Shemayim a halachic discussion? Is, perhaps tzniut has certain halachic implications, but the value, let's say, of being tzanua and what that means, is that a halachic discussion? So all the domain of, maybe you call it machshava, maybe you call it emuna, maybe you call it hashkafa, all of these areas also have their roots in Torah Sheba'al Peh, but you're not going to find them widely discussed in the classic halachic sources that we have been learning about. Okay, you're not going to find them discussed, you know, so broadly in the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, right, which is his psak halacha for all the sugyas and shas. Okay, you're not going to find it discussed very broadly in the Shulchan Aruch, or in the Tur, or in the Rif. All the halachic sources that we've been tracking throughout the generation is not going to teach you these hashkafic topics or big, you know, big Jewish philosophical questions, or even, you know, it's not going to go very in depth upon Mida development. These are all in the domain of ideas. I think that you can divide the Torah into these two components: actions and ideas. I think that might be the best way to describe it, where halacha is, you know, perhaps the exploration of appropriate action within, you know, Jewish tradition, and machshava is the exploration of Jewish thought, you know, within the Jewish tradition. And I think that we tend to overlook this, or we tend not to treat appropriate Jewish thought with the same degree of seriousness that we treat halacha. So what do I mean by that? Well, really first of all, halacha is significantly more organized. Okay, if you wanted to know everything there was to know about a specific halacha, I could refer you to a different sefer or series of Svarim that has been written every 50 years, roughly speaking, for the last 2,000 years. Right? Every generation summarizes, codifies, collects all the relevant information, and then adds a level. We've done this in almost every generation. Okay, if you wanted to know, let's say, what the legitimate approaches were in the domain of Torah interpretation. Can I read the text and interpret this for myself? Or let's say like this, if you wanted to know, you know, what do you do when there's an apparent contradiction between science and Torah? So all of these hashkafic topics, you know, big machshava topics or smaller hashkafic topics, have been addressed by different people at different times throughout the last, you know, couple thousand years, but we're not nearly as organized or as codified. We never had a tour and a Beit Yosef who said, okay, now I'm going to create order, you know, in every topic in Jewish thought, and fully illuminate all the positions and, you know, explain what we think is correct. It's just not, we're not nearly as organized in that regard. And furthermore, another way that we don't seem to take it quite as seriously is when you have a halachic question, okay, you pretty much know, whether you want to or not, you know that you have to ask someone. You know, unless you're confident that you know the answer, you know you pretty much have to ask someone. You know, and maybe even the person you ask has to ask someone if you have a halachic question. You know, it's pretty much, can I do this or can I not do this? Is this kosher or is it not kosher? Did I just make this pan treif or did I not just make this pan treif? Is this breaking Shabbos or is this not breaking Shabbos? You know you don't get to decide that. You know you don't get to decide whether something is breaking Shabbos or not breaking Shabbos. You have to ask or look it up. Okay, but when it comes to ideas and beliefs, to what degree do we, or how much stake do we attribute to our own thoughts on the matter? Meaning, like, you know the Torah has a hard position on whether something constitutes breaking Shabbos. You don't get to decide that. You have to go ask. Okay? What if you have a question in morals? And you're wondering, you know, you're wondering, I'm trying to think of a good but not overly controversial issue. But you know, okay, so maybe we'll get controversial. Let's say you're wondering along the following lines. How should I relate to slavery? What should be my position on slavery? I think everyone in this room would agree that it's bad. It's probably, you know, everyone would agree that it's bad. Why do you think it's bad? Do you think it's bad because you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks it's bad? Do you think it's bad because you think the Torah thinks it's wrong? Do you think it's bad because you think it's bad? Do you think it's bad because society has told you that it's wrong? Or Western society has told you that it's wrong? Or TV has told you that it's wrong? Or meaning, who told you it was wrong? I guess where, if you have a position on the matter, right or wrong, where did that come from? Now, let's say everyone is in agreement that it's bad. Let's say everyone is in agreement that it's bad. Still, how did you arrive at that conclusion? Because when you wanted to know if something was breaking Shabbos, you realized you had to ask. Because it's a halacha. It's something that you can or can't do. Okay. Well, if you wanted to figure out not right and wrong practically, or not allowed, not allowed, but right and wrong on an ethical level, okay, did you think that you had to ask someone who's an expert in Torah? Or did you think that you could figure this out for yourself? You had the capacity to evaluate on your own. Now, I'm not fully equating the two. You shouldn't leave here thinking that you're not allowed to think for yourself, or that machshava, let's say, and hashkafa are perfectly parallel worlds. Though there are those who would tell you that. Rav Soloveitchik was very much so of the opinion that hashkafa is identical to halacha in the way that if you want to know what's right or wrong, you have to ask for a psak. Even if it's not about what you can and can't do. You ask for a psak. What's right and wrong? Ask for a psak. Moral, immoral? Ask for a psak. But this is just another way that we seem not to take hashkafa quite as seriously as halacha. Halacha, you know, I don't decide for myself. I have to ask. I don't get to choose what is and isn't breaking Shabbos. But you do get to choose what is right and wrong, what's moral and immoral, based on your analysis, based on your upbringing. So here's a way that we just don't seem to treat hashkafa quite as seriously as halacha. The truth is that the truth is probably somewhere in between. How we treat it as totally hefker, where I just get to totally decide for myself what my ideology is. I don't have to ask anyone who knows more about Torah than I do. I don't even have to care that my ideology comes from Torah. I'm just going to come up with my ideology based on whatever it is and then try to superimpose it into the Torah if I care to. As opposed to actually needing a direct psak for all your opinions. So it's probably somewhere in between. Probably somewhere in between. We're also not quite, we're not so great at learning ideas in such an organized fashion. How do you know what Jewish ideas are? Well, up until this year, it's probably like, oh, well, I heard a rabbi say once, you know, I heard in a Dvar Torah that, I heard around a Shabbos meal, the following a nice idea. Following nice idea. Who told you that it's a Jewish idea? The fact that someone shared a Dvar Torah and then said, I think we could learn from that? Who is this person and why do they get to determine what Jewish values are because of how they understood a Rashi? You know what I'm saying? And a nice lesson is, I know it's a Jewish lesson. You decided. So these are all the ways that we just don't seem to treat ideas as seriously as we treat the halacha. And so what we want to do today is explore how our Mesorah, as it pertains not to halachas and mandatory actions, but our Mesorah as it pertains to ideas. Where Jewish ideas come from and how they were passed down and how we can determine whether or not something is an acceptable Jewish idea. When I say Jewish idea, it's almost it's funny. I don't mean like there are different people and some of the people are Jewish. There are different ideas and some of the ideas are Jewish. It's not what I'm saying. Such a thing as a Jewish idea, right? There's truth and there's not truth, right? Now, if something comes from Torah, then it's true, okay? If something doesn't come from Torah, well, there's a chance that it happens to be true. I mean, you could guess correctly, perhaps. I don't know that you can rely with any degree of confidence that it is true if there's no Torah source for it. It theoretically could be true, right? And then there are things that are anti-Torah and those would not be true. So when I say a Jewish idea, I don't mean like an idea that wears a kippah. You know what I'm saying? What I mean is like, is it true or not? Right? If it comes from Torah, then it's true. If it's not, then if it is against Torah, then it's not true. And if it is not so clear, you know, then it's potentially true. but a Jewish idea, you know, it's not like, well, there's the philosophers and there's this and there's that and then there's the Jewish ideas. It's like one perspective. No, like there being one God is not a perspective. It's like, well, the Jewish take is there's one God. No, the reality is there's one God and some people are wrong. Okay, so when we talk about Jewish ideas, we mean what's the truth? That's really what we mean. That's a great question. I don't know how much we're going to dedicate this class to deal specifically with that topic, but that's a great question, right? It's something that's clearly mentioned in the Torah.
In the middle, you would say?
So the last 2 weeks ago when we were discussing debate, how we mentioned that complexity does not limit clarity, it increases clarity, right? There's simplicity, right? And then there's clarity. Simplicity is when everything seems black and white to you, the reason it's not clarity is because things aren't, right? So it's nice to have simple answers. I don't know that it's truthful to have simple answers, but it's nice to have simple answers. And so the generally the accurate Torah perspective takes a lot of nuance and complexity into the picture, and you're very rarely to get a yes or no answer. There's how, and there's when, and there's why, and there, you know, so that's, I guess, the short answer. So let's try to, yeah.
So by, like, a Jewish idea, like, it's saying, like, how it's something to be able to, like, it's not a thing, really. Like, is that, like, going to the park and seeing, like, a Jewish woman, like, tell her it's something nice, but then you could see like a Christian woman telling her the same thing. Like you just said the same thing.
So a
Jewish idea, a Jewish nice thing.
So let's start with let's start from the. If I don't answer your question by the end of class, let me know. Okay, because we have to go through this somewhat methodologically. Okay, there is objective truth. Let's start with that. There can be multiple ways of understanding things. There could be multiple legitimate options, but there is truth and untruth. These exist as concepts. They are absolute. Okay, whether or not God exists is not your truth or subjective or depending on how you understand it. Or there are things that are true and there are things that are not true. A subset of things that were true and that were immediately relevant for us to know. There's some things that are true that are just not so relevant for us to know. What came before the world? What will be after the world? What's beyond the world? What's, you know, there are answers to those questions, but it's not particularly relevant necessarily to us. A subset of things that were true were given to us, where both in the Torah Shebichtav and in the Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, so what do I mean by that? There's plenty in the Torah that is not teaching me a law, but rather a lesson or a truth about reality itself. For example, God's creation of the world. OK, Okay, this tells me a very objective, a very objective account of, you know, how and why the world is here. God decided, God created it. It also, you know, it tells me that, you know, God is not, you know, is an all, you know, is a powerful being with a consciousness who chooses to do things. Okay. Now, there was a, there was a very prominent position 1,000 years ago that while God exists, God is responsible for the world's creation. He doesn't want things and he isn't engaged in the world. He just kind of set things in motion. It's like a force that sets things in motion, but not like a sentient being that interacts with you and looks out for you and listens to your prayers. That's like childish. So what Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim tells us in the Torah is, no, the God that we believe in is still very much relevant to human society and intervenes and wants things from us. Okay, so this is a principle of our faith that is a direct product of reading Torah and reading the pshat of Torah. Now, in addition, many aspects of what it is that we believe were transmitted not through writing, but like many halachas that weren't transmitted through writing, they were transmitted orally to Moshe. The Netziv writes in his introduction to the Torah that the Torah is basically the bullet points, like the notes, let's say, you're taking in Shir, and the Torah Shebaal Peh was like the Shir. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is up there explaining everything to Moshe, and he says, now I want you to write this, right? So it's like, I want you to write, take a Pre-Eitz Hadar, and now I'm going to tell you that's an etrog, and this is how big an etrog has to be, and this is how small an etrog can be, and this is, you know, what an etrog needs to... This is a Kadosh Baruch Hu explaining that. In the Torah it says, do Shechita. It doesn't say how to do Shechita. What? So Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed only to write down bullet points and to transmit all the explanations to Klal Yisrael. There's a reason for that. I don't know that we have time to get into it. But why by design there was meant to be a written versus an oral tradition? By design, we are very much meant to have both. They have different goals. They do different things. They exist for different purposes. Yeah.
It amazes me how, like, we've kept up an oral tradition for so long. Like, I understand how written, like, Torah can be, like, transmitted down, like, thousands of years because it's, like, concrete. You can copy over, but, like, to hear something and remember something and understand it and be able to explain it in a way that somebody else can understand it and then explain it in the same way, like, person to person until, like, whatever, eventually it was written down, but for so long, like, and it's like, some thousands of years.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why it was eventually written down. That's why it was eventually written down, is out of the concern that we would, you know, lose clarity around these issues. The necessity was, first of all, to codify it, and then ultimately to write it down, because, you know, this was the concern that we were headed towards. So just as Moshe Rabbeinu got, you know, basically the full shear, and the written Torah is just the notes, and then he passed down the shear orally to Yehoshua. So this exists as well, not just in the halachic components of the Torah, but also in the machshava components of the Torah. So when the Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, now I want you to write Bereishit bara Elokim v'shamayim v'ta'aretz v'aretz tatov v'vohu, so he's explaining to Moshe what exactly this means. And this is part of what we call Sitrei HaTorah, parts of Torah which we don't teach publicly, which are kind of like hidden and more, you know, kind of Kabbalistic in nature. And that is, you know, the secrets of how the world was created. And you can see this in the Ramban. The Ramban writes this explicitly, that when it comes to Bereishit, you should read it and basically get the big lessons out of it. God created the world and, you know, ABC and whatever it is. But you have no idea what it's talking about and the truth of what mass liberation is actually describing and how it happened and what happened was passed down to Moshe Rabbeinu, and very, 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 very few people understand what the Torah is even talking about there. See, just like there are two sides to the transmission of Torah in Halacha, the written and then the explanation, so also in Machshava and in Emuna, there were two sides to the transmission of Torah. There is the written and the oral. Okay. Beyond that, the question comes up of what if in a certain idea is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah and not extracted or not transmitted to us in through the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? So how can we explore what is true if it has not been addressed directly in the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaal Peh? Well, in Halacha, there are multiple mechanisms, right? We said the first mechanism beyond Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh for us to explore the Halacha was the Yud Gimel Midot. Remember we discussed that? Is that can we extract more from the text than is written there apparently? Okay, the truth is there are also Midot that explore non-halachic topics. There are Midot that explore non-halachic topics. There are 13 primary Midot that explore halachic topics. There are 32 Midot that explore other areas of Torah exposition that is not strictly halachic. The one that you'd probably be most familiar with is Gematria, but there are 32 in total mechanisms by which we can extract more information from Torah, not limited to the halachic domain. 32 of those principles. Okay, so that is about extracting things from Torah. Okay, what about beyond that? Does a human being have any capacity, if they didn't read it in the Torah, or they didn't get it by a tradition, or they didn't expound this information from the Midot, does a human being have any capacity for themselves to clarify the truth? Okay, so first we need to, we'll divide human beings up for a second here. The art of what we know as nevuah basically is the art of determining truthful ideas as opposed to halachas. The historically speaking, our Torah authorities made a massive shift. Okay? The greatest Torah leaders in our history for a very long period of time were Nevi'im. Now, most people had to train to become a Navi. They would either go to school for it, or they would have an apprenticeship, learning from a prominent accepted Navi. And some very, very unique individuals would just basically have Nevuah bestowed upon them. That's how Nevuah worked. Okay, the art of becoming a Navi is basically this process of clarifying the truth. And this is not purely an intellectual process. In fact, it might be first and foremost a spiritual process whereby you refine yourself to a degree where you are such a godly individual that you are privy to information that is of a godly origin. And that's basically the idea. It's partially intellectual, but our, not just obsession, but our connection to the physical world and physical desires makes it more difficult for us to see things objectively from, let's say, God's perspective, as it were. But as you refine yourself spiritually, you're able to have a keener perception of the reality through a Kadosh Baruch Hu's eyes. That's basically the idea. That's what Nevi'im would do. That's what Nevi'im would do. And once you get to a certain level, you could even get Nevuah. Right? But the process by which you become a Navi is through the exploration primarily of ideas and not through halachas. At a certain point, this switched in our history. The Gemara in Bava Batra addresses this and basically says the reason why this switched is because what the Gemara calls chachamim, right? And these are like poskim, rabbanim, people who are experts in the domain of halacha, were more successful in helping Klal Yisrael than Nevi'im were. How did that happen? I mean, what does that even mean? Okay, well, a Navi would get up and basically speak to Klal Yisrael about Yirat Shemayim and nationalism and Eretz Yisrael and Chataim and Tshuva and Avodah Hashem and all these wonderful things. And would the Tzibur take them seriously? Yes, they would in fact take them very, very, very seriously. They would be inspired beyond what you can imagine. And then what happened 3 days later? They would go back to whatever they were doing before. And it wasn't, to a certain degree, it was hard to blame them because you can't live on inspiration alone. You actually need a practical guidelines as to how to live a holy life. You can't just be inspired by holiness and just say, you know, be inspired by holiness. I'm going to tell you how important it is to be holy, and then you're just going to go out and you're going to be holy for the rest of your life. You don't know what that means. You need to know how. Not just what we value, but how to achieve that. Rav Kook compares it to, you know, like you can be moved by a love song. You can be brought to tears more than, let's say, a book about marriage counseling. Right, but you can just read the book, and it seems dry, and it seems, you know, it seems unmoving and uninspiring. It's information. It's a mixture of, you know, tips and psychology and neuroscience, and okay, right? But a love song can bring you to tears. You'll want to listen to it again and again and again and again. Okay, but which one is going to actually help you have a successful marriage? You can't listen to a love song. Oh, I'm so inspired. I'm going to have the best marriage ever. You don't know how. Right? One of them actually teaches you how to live your life. Right? So this is where the Nevuah was deficient, is that they would speak of these inspiring messages and get Klal Yisrael going because they didn't know what to do with that. They're like, I want to be holy so badly. I don't know how. So the Chachamim came and said, okay, let's start with the morning. Wake up. Say Mode Ani. Thank you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, for giving you your neshama back. And what do you do next? What do you do next? What do you do next? What do you do every week? What do you do every month? What do you do in your kitchen? What do you do here? What do you do at work? We need a direction. Right? So these two domains of halacha and machshava, we used to excel in the domain of machshava. That's when we had Nevi'im. And it just seemed that the Chachamim did a better job at helping Klal Yisrael stay strong. Now, the truth is the ideal is some sort of balance or synthesis between the two, as Rav Kook details that, you know, the system can only go so far because if you give practical guidance, in an increasingly detailed fashion in every generation till we get to the point that you have no idea what it is you're striving towards, you only know what you're supposed to be doing, then it's like, you're just reading marriage counseling books without actually being married to someone. You know, it's like, at the end of the day, it was supposed to cultivate the relationship, right? Yeah, but the book wasn't the relationship, Right? At the end of the day, you're supposed to be using that to have a relationship with someone. So Rav Kook spoke about it. Eventually, we're going to be so obsessed with the how to that we forget that the how is actually a way to have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And we're just going to want to, we're like, I'm going to do this halacha, and this halacha, and this halacha, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to follow this chumrah, and this chumrah, and this safek, and this safek. Okay, but do you realize you're supposed to be having a relationship with God in all of this? Or are you worshiping the halacha? So eventually it's going to go too far, and we're going to have to reach a certain synthesis of the two, where you have a deep sense of the ideas that the halacha is supposed to be facilitating, but also recognize that the halacha is going to be the best way of getting there. But that being said, as long as we had Nevi'im, it was very clear that we had the capacity to arrive at divine truth, even that wasn't told to us explicitly in the Torah. So, if you read the Divrei HaNeviim, and there's talking about Emunah, or Machshava, or other concepts, you can rely on that being a Torah-true concept. Okay? Especially if you're reading in Ketuvim, and Ketuvim just sometimes has, like, the original Machshava Svarim. Like, take Mishlei, for example. The whole thing is just Jewish thought 101, if you can understand it. All of Kohelet is a thesis about the appropriate way of living your life and the inappropriate ways of living your life. These came from the Divrei Nevi'im, and they are Torah true. Beyond that, so we had a certain Mesorah that we passed down, both based on Torah Shebichtav. That's not really a Mesorah passed down, it's just written in the Torah Shebichtav. But the interpretation of the Torah Shebichtav through the Midot, as well as the Torah Shebaal Peh on these concepts, as well as the traditions we have from the Nevi'im in these concepts. And by the way, we had a lot more Nevuah than is written in the Nevi'im. Thousands of Nevuahs, hundreds of books. We have 24 or 19, post the Torah. But there was so much Nevuah, and even if something wasn't written down, the ideas that the Nevi'im taught us still could have been transmitted. So anything that we can date back to, Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaal Peh, Mesorah through the Midot, or the Divrei Nevi'im, these are Torah true concepts. And these are things that we've been transmitting every single generation, but in different generations, they transmitted this differently. So, for example, you'll read in the Gemara, and I forget who mentioned Midrash. One of you mentioned Midrash. So, you'll read like weird stories that sound like children's stories that like can't possibly be true, and you just don't know what to do with them. And maybe you respect the source, so you're like, okay, I get I'm supposed to think that this is meaningful. Maybe you don't respect the source, and you're like, this is stupid, and the people who wrote it are stupid, Well, the truth is that there was a hesitance of transmitting our ideological traditions as clear as day. And so what the Chachamim did in the time of the Mishnah and the time of the Gemara is to speak about their traditions that they had from Torah Shebaal Peh and from the Nevi'im in codes, in secrets, in riddles, and in kind of strange stories. And very few people were ever privy to the depth of what they're actually intending. The Rambam writes about this in his Hakdamah LaParish Mishnayot, where he says there are people who belittle these texts. The people there are people who just take them kipshuto, and that's like, then you believe in weird children's stories, and then there are people who belittle them because they look like strange children's stories, but that's saying a lot more about them than about the authors. If you belittle the stories, it's because you don't see the depth of them, and that's because of that's because of your lack of intellect, not because you're so intelligent. Is that you don't see the nimshal in the mashal. You don't see the truth in the metaphor. And he says very few people do see the truth in the metaphor. And those who do, it's a very small group. And these are the people who transmit the our truthful ideas, you know, through tradition moving forward. So those ideas, again, recorded, you know, you have Torah, you have Torah Shebichtav, you have the Divrei Nevi'im, then you have the Agadotas and the Midrashim, which are the transmission of Jewish ideas generally in kind of like a hidden fashion. Just like at a certain point, we transitioned from a Gemara-based discussion of halacha to like, and do this and don't do this, and do this and don't do this, this codified halachic works, we also started to have codified Hashgafic works. So what do I mean by that? Just like there are all these sugyas in the Gemara that discuss halacha, and the Rambam is like, I'm just going to tell you what to do. Do this, don't do that. Okay. So there are all these sugyas in, you know, from Tanaic sources and Amoraic sources, right? And Nevi'im sources and Torah sources, and they constitute a breadth of information about Jewish ideas. And the Rambam was like, I'm just going to tell you what we think. Instead of you having to work out the sugya for yourself, right? So he took all the sugyas and he just said, okay, and here's what we believe. What sefer did he write that in? That's the Mornavuchim. Now the Rambam was not the only one to do this or the first one to do this. Rav Sadja Gaon did this in a sefer called Emunot V'Deot. And Rav Albo did this in a sefer called Sefer HaIkarim. Why is there so much halacha if it's all the same? Right. So there are different ways of interpreting the Midrashim, and there are different perspectives around the idea. But just like within halacha, there's a range of legitimate opinions, but also things that are not legitimate actions. So too in the range of hashkafa, there are legitimate understandings of Torah true ideas and things that just don't follow any sort of tradition whatsoever. Okay. And in a similar, not identical, but in a similar nature to how halacha was transmitted over time, first around a little more cryptic and discussion based and analysis based, transitioned into, you know, codified works just of Jewish law. A very similar process happened in the domain of Hashgafa, where the Rambam said, here's all the things that we think, and you don't have to read through, you know, all of Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, Midrash, Agadata, you know, I'll just tell you, these are all the things that we think are true. These are all the things that we think are not true. Okay? And Rav Sadja Gaon did this, and Rav Albo did this, and Rav Yehuda Halevi did this in the Kuzari, all sharing their vantage point on what our Masorah has to say about what's true and what's not true. The Ramchal did this in Derech Hashem. Different thinkers would latch on to different areas and not just codify all of Jewish thought, but try to expand upon what we know and what we can tell about Jewish ideas. Right? That's what you see in the Maharal. It's what you see in Rav Kook. It's what you see in Rav Tzadok. It's what you see in Rabbi Nachman. It's what it's what you see in Nefesh Chaim. Different areas that they're trying to expand upon what we know. Okay, what we have to do with the final couple minutes, though there's still what to talk about, but what we want to ask now is there any room in that process then, is there any more room in the process of Jewish ideas, machshava, hashkafa, for independent thinking than there is in halacha? And you know what? We really don't have time for this. So this will be our last class in Mitzvah Shem next week. We spoke about our tradition as it pertains to Machshava. Now we need to explore the domain of the individual and their thought within arriving at the truth. You know, you want there to be room for individual thought, but obviously you don't want that to compromise your clarity of what the truth is. You know, so what's the balance? How much are you allowed to think for yourself and it still be considered true as opposed to what you came up with based on whatever biases that you might have? That's what we're going to explore next week.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. I, the source of